It appears we have both counsel present. Counsel, this is the case of Hawkins versus Delgado. We will begin by having the members of the court introduce themselves. Then I will recognize counsel and we will proceed with arguments. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and then by seniority of service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning. Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. And counsel, Mr. Chipman, are you with us here today?
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
Good morning.
Can anyone hear me? Hi, I can't hear anyone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Everything was working fine for me, but I can't hear anyone. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do. Should I call? Should I call?
If she cannot hear the court, then I have a WebEx.
Yes, okay. Wait a minute. Okay, I'm feeling better. Yes, I apologize. I thought I was doing everything right.
We all have WebEx issues, so that works. Good morning to you. We had all of the members of the court introduce themselves. I'm not going to do that again. I assume that you know who we are. So, Mr. Chipman or you, Ms. Murphy, have any questions before we begin?
No, sir.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chipman, then you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman, and I have the pleasure of representing the appellant, Eric Delgado. The facts of this case are that Mr. Delgado and Ms. Hawkins are both first lieutenants in the U.S. Air Force active duty. They were in a romantic relationship, including at one point in time cohabitating. Lieutenant Hawkins is stationed at Offutt Air Force Base, and Mr. Delgado, or Lieutenant Delgado, is stationed in Arizona. At some point in time, Lieutenant Hawkins files a protection harassment protection order in Douglas County District Court against Lieutenant Delgado. And that the series of events that Lieutenant Hawkins complains about begin on December 29th of 2019 and extend at most until February 2nd of 2020. It's a 35-day period. Based upon the petition for the protection order, at most I can see Lieutenant Hawkins alleging seven contacts that constitute harassment. Prior to...
Is there any requirement in the statute or case law that the allegations of harassment have to be longer than a month or shorter than a month or 6 months long, or are there any requirements like that?
Your Honor, there are no requirements as to a certain number of contacts. However, the statute does talk about it has to be a series of contacts, and in this case, it's seven. And for instance, a case that's often cited is the Henry Jeffrey K case, which was also cited in the appellee's brief. And I would submit to the court, in that case, it was 200 contacts. You know, the Glanz v. Daniels case was 80 contacts, and they found that not to be enough of a harassment in that case. In this case, I think it depends on the nature of what those contacts are and how involved they are. For instance, there was a case maybe about 3 years ago It was Knopik versus Hahn, Your Honor, and that was before the Court of Appeals. And in that case, the one party yells profanities in front of the house of the victim, and then a few days later, it punches the victim three times. And the court in that case found that was not a sufficient, they overturned the protection order in that case, which was a harassment protection order, saying that was not a sufficient series of events, Your Honor. And I think it's important to look at that issue because, you know, what's recognized is that a harassment protection order is akin to an injunction. And because it's akin to an injunction, Your Honor, it's an extreme remedy. And it should be given out, you know, if there's no other means, and should be seldom. I believe, you know, it's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary remedy. There should be actual and substantial injury, Your Honor. And in this case, there's not. It has to be seriously.
Aren't all of these cases going to turn heavily on the specific facts and the context of the case? Isn't it going to be hard to color match from one fire case to another?
Your Honor, if I also want to mention, I don't believe the timer has started. I'm not sure that's...
Oh.
And so, Justice Papik, let me address that. So, you know, there is not necessarily going to be a color match, but there's got to be a minimal standard that this court reviews. This court reviews these de novo on their record. And normally they give deference, Your Honor, to what the court has found based upon the credibility that they've weighed the witnesses. But in this case, you literally have one piece of evidence, which is the petition. The petition is offered. There's no testimony in this case. There's still a show cause hearing, right? Which means that in this case, the petitioner maintains the burden. And there's the Mammoth case that was decided in 2010 that states that the petitioner maintains that burden throughout all of these proceedings, Your Honor. And so in this case, while the petition can be prima facie indication of harassment, there still must be the petitioner still must carry that burden, and the petitioner carried did no testimony at all at the show cause hearing. And so, go ahead.
Mr. Chipman, did I understand your argument correctly that you were arguing based on our decision from 2007 in Jeffrey K?
I was mentioning, yes, Your Honor, the Henry Jeffrey K case, what? Regarding that was a standard where they found that harassment had actually occurred, Your Honor.
Wasn't the statute amended after that?
It was, Your Honor. It was amended, but subsequent cases since Henry Jeffrey K, Your Honor, have found, for instance, like the Daniel versus Glantz case, where there were 80 text messages between the alleged victim and her ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend. You know, while they found that to be overwhelming, they didn't actually find it to be harassment. In this case, at most, the Lieutenant Delgado is saying that, you know, he can't live without her. He wants to kill himself. He will kill himself if he doesn't get back with her. And at the end of the day, these people were in a romantic relationship, and Lieutenant Delgado is obviously struggling to get over the relationship. But at the same time, his actions are not rising to the level of seriously terrifying or a series of events that makes it so that
didn't Lieutenant Delgado call her with a noose around his neck and threaten to kill himself during a video call? That's
correct. That was the alleged allegation on the second occurrence, that he did put a noose around his neck and threatened to kill himself.
Promise that none of this would stop until it all burns, and that there's a storm coming, and after the storm, everything will be calm, and she will be free from herself and her past. That wasn't a threat against him. That is a threat against her.
Your Honor, you know, he's basically saying karma, something's going to come back and bite you. But also at the same time, it's an unspecified threat. And so there's an unpublished
case. How specific does it have to be?
Well, I think it has to be somewhat specific, because if you look at Cassidy versus Weinstein, well, I understand that's an unpublished case. They talk about, you know, these veiled, you know, vague threats are insufficient to constitute harassment. And again, you know, these are, it's not like it's over and over and over again. It's seven contacts. And the other thing I think is important is she files for the protection order on the third of February, after he says, nice try to her. So that's one of the seven contacts that I'm including, nice try. And then he's not served until the 18th of February. And there's no evidence whatsoever that he attempts to contact her after or prior to being served with that protection order.
Mr. Chairman, didn't he report this to her superiors with the military? And didn't they get involved? And didn't they tell him not to have contact? And
Your Honor,
he continues to have contact, and then she seeks the protection order?
So to address that, Your Honor, yes, they did do a mutual no contact order, I believe, on January 3rd or 31st of 2020. And then she alleges that on the 2nd of February, he says, nice try to her, which could be technically considered a violation of that no contact order through the military. But again, we're looking at it. Harassment protection order should not be given willy-nilly. These are extreme remedies. And you have basically seven contacts, and you also have the burden on the petitioner. And the petitioner, again, offers the affidavit, nothing else. And the court affirms the protection order with the burden in place, no testimony, nothing. So you have to review it based upon that affidavit alone. The affidavit is insufficient. I mean, there's case law talking about how extreme it has to be for there to be a harassment protection order.
I beg your pardon. Could you remind me the source of your proposition that the burden is always on Ms. Hawkins?
Your Honor, the case is Mahmoud, and it's a 2010 case. And I think that's a very important case, because what that case says is that the petition, the offering and acceptance of petition, does not alleviate the petitioner from demonstrating the burden of proof. She has to demonstrate the truth of all matters, and also continue to carry that burden. And so in this case, there's no testimony. She simply just offers the petition, and that's it. And that's it. There's no testimony, nothing. And again, it's her burden under Mahmoud. Continues to be her burden under Mahmoud. The other issue in this case is that both parties are unequivocally in the military. That is clear. And while Lieutenant Delgado's counsel at the time did not follow the Service Member Civil Relief Act by, you know, having an indication that he was unavailable because of military duty, and also indicating that leave was not authorized, it was known that military members were not allowed to travel during that period of time of COVID, which Lieutenant Keeley would have known unequivocally. And the other thing is that the court had already, at that time, the court had already freely given Lieutenant Hawkins two continuances without even a hearing. So you have COVID going on, and you have Lieutenant Hawkins given two free continuances. And
how was your client prejudiced by not getting the continuance?
Because he wasn't able to be present at the hearing, and not being present at the hearing, he wasn't able to testify against what Lieutenant Hawkins was alleging. And obviously, as a military member, I mean, there's several things that could have been offered in evidence. For instance, you're non-deployable with a protection order against you, which are our military regulations. As a former JAG, anyone would know that.
You were present, or he was represented by counsel?
He was represented by counsel, Your Honor. It wasn't our firm, but it was someone else that represented him. And at the end of the day is, there was no question that he was in the military. That was on the face of the petition, Your Honor. And while I understand what Rickard says, Rickard also says that the court on its own motion, the court can still without strict compliance of the Service Member Civil Relief Act, can still grant the stay or continuance. And given the fact of what we're going through COVID right now, COVID-19, and the challenges, there was also indication on the record that the judge would not allow him to appear by video because the petitioner's counsel would not consent to it.
Is that statutory?
Well, statutory, no. No, there is no basis for that, as far as I can tell. And it's in my brief that that's impermissible. There is no requirement that the other party agree to someone appearing by telephone or by video. That's within the purview that basically should have been allowed, particularly given.
Do you have that statutory reference?
I have it in my brief, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's in my second argument, but it is in section 25 of the code. And so I absolutely was abuse of discretion for them not to allow the stay. I'd like to reserve the remaining 26 minutes or seconds I have, if I could, please.
Thank you very much. Now, how many minutes are we dealing with here for rebuttal? This looks like 20 seconds. We gave you 10 minutes and some extra time. I apologize for that. And we'll give you at least a half minute for rebuttal time. Ms. Murphy, good morning to you. We will give you 10 minutes. If you need longer than that, holler after we get through 10 minutes. So you may proceed.
No, we're not hearing you.
You must be on mute.
Okay.
Now we hear you.
Wonderful, thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Christina Murphy. I represent the appellee, Keely Hawkins. I think the appellant's brief is remarkable in that nowhere do they allege that anything in Keely Hawkins' petition is untrue. As we know, according to Glantz versus Daniel from 2013, the standard is, would a reasonable, objective person in the position of Keely Hawkins be seriously terrified, threatened, or intimidated by the conduct of appellant Delgado? But what are the undisputed facts? We know that Keely Hawkins was seriously terrified, threatened, and intimidated because we have her words in her affidavit in the record, which, according to Nebraska Revised Statute Section 28-311.09, Section 7, is automatically an exhibit. Appellee Hawkins writes, "I have tried everything to get him to leave me alone, and he won't stop. At this point, my entire well-being has deteriorated rapidly. My sense of safety is completely gone. I am living in fear each day, scared of what he might do next. He knows where I live and could possibly have access to a key to my home. It had become clear to me that he had no intention of respecting my decisions, boundaries, or safety. The fear and stress of the situation has affected my ability to fall and stay asleep. My appetite is gone, and long periods of concentration is nearly impossible now. I'm scheduled to be deployed in 2 weeks. I have to remain hypervigilant because I do not know what he is capable of. I have had my locks rekeyed. I have notified my neighbors to call the police if he shows up at my house. And I am getting a security system installed this Thursday." Those were her words when she applied for this petition. We know, according to N. Ray Jeffrey K., that we also need to look at, would a reasonable person be expected to alter her course of conduct to avoid such intimidation? And we know that Keely Hawkins did, in fact, alter her course of conduct. She told him she wanted no further contact with him. She blocked his phone number. She reported his harassment to her commanding officer in the Air Force, and she obtained a military no-contact order against him. But would a reasonable person be seriously threatened or intimidated? Would a reasonable person alter their course of conduct? Protection orders are reviewed de novo on the record, and we have the record in Appellee's protection order affidavit.
Counsel?
Yes.
What is the significance, if any, of the lack of live testimony at the hearing?
I don't believe there was any significance to that, Your Honor, because at no point did the attorney for the opposing counsel dispute that anything in the petition was untrue. At the hearing, he never alleged that if my client was here, he would testify that this is untrue. So clearly, they were accepting all the facts in the petition. And if I can continue, the appellant's argument is misplaced when they say that it's only seven contacts between December 29th through the obtaining of the petition. At the beginning of her petition, she writes that from September 2017 through December 28th of 2019, they dated on and off. But every time she tried to break off the relationship, appellant Delgado would threaten to kill himself or ruin her career. Finally, she'd had enough on December 29th, and that's when she tells him in no uncertain terms, do not contact me. I will block you if you do. He responds that very same day, saying that he has talked to God and he will leave his life insurance to her. Then he contacts her the next day on the 30th of December, again apologizing for his behavior. But that's not enough, because 3 days later, on January 3rd, while she is in deployment in Japan, he video conferences her from the closet of his home with a hangman's noose around his neck and a bottle of straight alcohol in his hand. And he threatens to kill himself in front of her if she does not reconcile with him. I submit that a reasonable person would be seriously threatened at that point by the appellant's behavior. Placing the threat of suicide directly into her hands, this time not just with his words, but with the visual stark reality of him with a hangman's noose around his neck. That same day, she took further action and she changed her behavior. She blocked him on her phone. 2 days later, again, through an old email account on January 5th, he threatened to ruin her career because he didn't want anyone to know that he had done this suicide attempt in his closet. And he said, if it gets out that I did this, I will ruin your career, a threat. January 13th, he makes it clear he is never going to leave her alone. He obtains a new phone that is used for the purpose of having a new phone number, a burner phone, and he states he is trying to get transferred to Omaha. And then I submit that he objectively says, I am never leaving you alone with these words. Block this number, I'll get another burner, LOL. The next three contacts, I submit, a reasonable person would have been terrified for their lives. On January 18th, he sends two emails. The first one, time has come, karma. The second one, it won't stop till it all burns, that I promise. And he follows up the next day with these words, there is a storm coming. Afterwards, there shall be calm. Keely, you will be free from yourself and your past. I submit a reasonable, objective person would see that as a threat of physical violence, if not murder, to their person. Did this stop the perpetrator? No. On January 23rd, appellant changed her behavior. She reported the conduct to her reporting Air Force commander. On January 31st, 2020, she obtained a military no-contact order against appellant Delgado, which is in the record.
Was that a mutual no-contact order?
Did you say, is that reciprocal?
Was that a mutual no contact order, and is that of any significance?
Your Honor, let me explain. It's not mutual in that each commanding officer at both bases both decided to implement a no contact. So there was one at both places, okay? There's no question that she had one against her too. And it is significant because he was served, that document is in the record showing that he was served on January 31st with that document of no contact, but 2 days later, on February 2nd, he sends her an email that says, nice try, referring to the no contact order, and he says he's coming to Omaha. That is when she reaches out to get the protection order. Counsel for the appellant seems to be arguing that if you don't use the words, I will kill you, I will stab you, I will murder you, then it's not a threat. I submit that all of this was threatening and harassing behavior and that she had reason to be in fear for her physical safety. If the court chooses to review the unpublished decision that they refer to in their brief of Cassidy versus Winterstein, we would ask that you also review the unpublished case that just came out April 20th, 2020 from the Court of Appeals of Tricia L. versus J. Michael S., which has facts strikingly similar to this case, including the use of the term karma and threatening to get her fired. Finally, the appellant seems to be arguing that the trial court should have granted Mr. Delgado's request for a stay on the basis of the Service Members Civil Relief Act. However, they admit in their brief that they did not comply with the terms of the Civil Members Civil Relief Act. They had no communication from his commanding officer. He gave no indication to court when he would be available. By contrast, when Appellee Delgado requested a continuance, it is in the record that she complied with the Service Members Relief Act and she put in when she would be available and she had a letter from her commanding officer.
What are we to make of the fact that Mr. Chipman responded to questions about whether or not his client was privileged and he said, yes, my client was harmed in any way. And he said, yes, my client was. He was not able to be here and testify. And apparently, I'm not sure, apparently you or your client would not agree to allowing him to telephonically be present at the hearing.
It was presented to me by the judge that we had a choice of agreeing to it. At the time, I felt that he should appear. At no point, I believe their argument is disingenuous because at no point did his attorney allege that anything in the petition was untrue and that if his client was there, he would be able to argue that it was untrue. He just argued legal arguments why the hearing should not proceed. If the court finds that for some reason this case should have been stayed or continued for live testimony, we would ask that the remedy not be dismissal, but simply to reverse and remand with instructions. But we feel that there is plenty of evidence on the record that she was seriously intimidated, terrified, and threatened, and the protection order should remain in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Chipman, we'll give you 30 seconds of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address the second argument. Justice Freudenberg asked the question of what statute, and the statute is Nebraska Revised Statute 24-734. And the court misapplied that statute, which only applies to video or telephonic testimony by non-party witnesses. So what the case of In re Estate of Newman states is that does not apply to parties, Your Honor, and by the judge not allowing Lieutenant Delgado to appear at that hearing telephonically with COVID going on, that is an abuse of discretion, Your Honor. That was even more reason why a stay should have been granted. I mean, an absolute abuse. And so what courts over and over again across the country are saying is, we'll work with you, we'll have a video teleconference, we'll do something because of COVID-19. And if we don't grant a continuance, it's because we're going to allow access to the court in another way. And this case, that was shut off. That was absolutely shut off from Lieutenant Delgado, Your Honor. And that's a huge abuse of discretion, particularly considering, you know, all of the cases across the land state that the Service Member Civil Relief Act should be liberally construed to protect the military member. There's a reason for that, Your Honor. There's an absolute reason for that. And this judge did abuse his discretion by not at least allowing a stay, particularly given the fact that he misapplied state law.
Thank you very much.
I beg your pardon, Chief. May I ask a question?
You may.
What relief would you seek from this court?
Well, Your Honor, I understand that the protection order is to expire on February 2nd, and I would ask that because of the fact that he was not given the opportunity to appear, that the protection order be dismissed.
If I may add something, would it be all right? Remember that the statute allows this to be renewed, so it is not controlling that this will expire on the 3rd. She can apply for it to be renewed.
Ms. Murphy, thank you very much. We don't normally allow rebuttal to rebuttal. Does anyone have further questions? Mr. Chipman, do you have anything further?
Nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel, for participating by WebEx. That concludes our arguments in Hawkins versus Delgado. So, counsel, you are excused.